Sunday's sermon is for all of us who feel a bit jaded, a bit weary. In every language in the world, there is a phrase that means in Australian, I'm plum tuckered out, or in Gaelic, hamisky, or perhaps in French, je suis très fatigué. Perhaps it's more expressive than my version of je suis très fatigué. But we all know that scraping the bottom of the barrel, done, end of tether, the moment is slipping to a crisis. Anyone who reads the newspapers from the UK has this feeling. Anyone who thinks about the condition of the church in Europe has this feeling. I'm familiar with this feeling. I remember walking the Camino de Santiago, the Jakobsweg, the Chemin de Saint-Jacques, 2008, and one day I decided to leave the hostel 6:30 in the morning, and I walked till midday, and it was a fairly long walk, about 20 kilometres by midday, and it was in a lovely little town called Estella, and I decided it was just too cramped, and the day was too beautiful, and I wanted to keep walking. I should have known, 20 kilometres is probably my limit. But I kept going. I'll keep going, and I'll walk out of this lovely little valley up the hill, not realising up the hill kept going for another 20 kilometres. Almost all uphill. And I can distinctly remember walking through a forest and seeing the hill in the distance and thinking, where am I going to sleep? Because I'm never going to make the hostel. I'm absolutely done. And I could count the aches and pains. I remember doing this distinctly of how there was a pain there, and my shin was sore, and my shoulder was hurting me. And maybe I should just take my rucksack off for a while, but knowing that if I took my rucksack off, I wouldn't put it back on again. I didn't know what to do. And I was new to the Camino. And I was new to the pared-down nature of what it is to walk a pilgrimage, of how you've left everything else behind. All you have is what's on your mind, and you have no other resources. And I never thought then to ask help. What do I do next? And as I walked along very slowly by then, feeling very sorry for myself, I heard footsteps beside me. A lady called Marianne, a German lady from Augsburg, who had been walking the Camino for about a year, all the way from Augsburg, near Munich, to go to Santiago de Compostela, some 2,000 miles. And she fell into pace with me, and we began to talk, and we told our stories. And before I knew it, we were at the next hostel. She was one of my angels. She did it three times to me in the Camino. But we talked about this story. She talked to me about this story that we just read in John's Gospel, about how water was turned into wine, and how a crisis became a moment of glory. But before we look at the story, two hints from John. Whenever in any of the writings of John, or the community of John in the Bible, any of the writings, you read something about a wedding, you have to remember he's giving us a hint. This is about the church. This is about us, the people of God. Whether it's the bride and the bridegroom in Revelation, whether it's the lady and her children in the letters of John, or whether it's a wedding in John chapter 2. That's the first hint. And if the people in the church and the people who are Christians feel that the church is in crisis, the numbers are falling, the energy is diminishing, that every denomination is seeing things not as they once were, John is saying to us, is the experience of being a church? Let me quote from Samuel Rutherford in the 17th century. Samuel Rutherford was a Scottish minister who wrote letters to lots of people, and his letters are full of incredible wisdom. And I remember this is the 17th century, and if you're being nostalgic for the times when the church in Europe was at its strongest, sometimes the 17th century stands out for that. It is the Lord's wisdom, he writes, that his kirk should forever be hanging by a thread. Less than the string we were using. And that thread does not break, being fixed on him that is the sure nail in David's house. So that's the first thing he said. That we often, as a church, feel at this point in this wedding. And the same feeling can be described in the story of Elisha with the jar of olive oil that doesn't quite run out, or the story of the two loaves and fish that are up in the window here, where 5,000 are fed, or the story at the well where everyone is thirsty but there is enough. Or Mary saying to Jesus at Lazarus' grave, "If only you'd been here." And John's first hint is, wherever we find ourselves, Jesus is here. He's not far away. He's at the wedding feast. He's here. And the second hint he gives us, and I love this, he describes this story as it happened on the third day. Now, there's a clue, isn't it? Whenever you read "on the third day," it means one of two things. It's a reference to the book of Genesis, when on the third day, all fruit trees were created. It's a story about wine. Now, if you live in this area of Switzerland, I reckon you know about wine. St. Augustine describes wine as the miracle of water being turned into wine every year, and we do not notice. And we do not celebrate that miracle because it happens all the time. That rainwater be turned into wine, yet we do not marvel at the work of God. So here's a hint. Jesus is the one who turns water into wine. He is the Lord of creation. But there's another third day, isn't there? There's a third day of the resurrection. This is a resurrection story. Jesus died and rose again. He who died is risen. And he is here. And John is giving us the hint. The one who was at the beginning, the one who died and rose again, the one who was at the wedding feast is here. Among us. Let's look at the story. The first thing I'd like to think about is this is completely unexpected. Are weddings in Switzerland like weddings in Scotland, where everything is planned down to the most infinitesimal detail? I think there are wedding planners exist now, don't they? Who will do it all for you for a handsome sum. And it's a great business for some folk. Because the need is to have everything planned and covered. I'm sure first century Cana was absolutely no different. You can imagine the conversation. We need to tread more grapes. We need better wine presses. Why didn't you order from the next village as well? Whose fault is it? We should have done more. We need to do more. Look, just get the cart out and go the next 20 miles to the next village and just get all the wine you can find. Bring it back. And that is the normal human response to a crisis, that we should do more. I remember a couple of years ago, you get to my age, a couple of years is 20. And that's the truth. I was working as a student in the grounds department of the university, and we cut grass. That's what we did, we cut grass. I spent 2 months cutting grass, and we were the students, and there were the workers who worked there all year, and we were the butt of all their jokes. And one of them said to me, "You need to change the blade on that lawnmower." And I, of course, green behind the ears is the grass I'm cutting. And I turn the lawnmower upside down, get the spanner out, and try and turn the bolt. Nothing. Nothing will turn that nut on that bolt. "What are you going to do, Peter?" he says. They're all sitting around watching me, having a good laugh at this weak student who cannot turn a nut on a bolt. "Why don't you get that piece of piping over there and attach it to the end of the spanner?" So there it is, on. I'm pulling this thing. And this lasts for about 15 minutes. And I see the supervisor coming across. And what's going on here? Well, Peter's trying to turn the nut. And he looks at it, and he's got it right away. And he says, "Gosh, what are you doing?" And he says, "Actually, on a lawnmower, the nut and the thread goes the other way. You're going entirely the wrong way. It's not like all the other threads. It goes utterly the other way. Utterly the other way. The last thing I expected." Mary goes to Jesus and does the last thing anyone expects. Says, "I don't know why." And here is a motif. Here is a cameo. Here is a moment. When we're feeling at the end of our tether, the last thing we expect is the first thing we can do. Go to Christ and say, and we can expect the unexpected. And what happens is Jesus does something beyond anyone's imagination. Nobody expects him to take what's in hand. You can imagine Jesus sitting there, looks through the door, and sees around the corner, he sees big jugs. That's 20 to 30 gallons. Fill them to the brim. Nobody expects this. Fill them to the brim. There's something about the unexpected, about being willing to stop and do something different in the church, in our lives. We want to do the same things, only better. But maybe there's something new here, something completely different. Mary says to the servants, Do what he tells you. I wonder if we've stopped and asked, what is it you want me to do? As individuals, as our community, we do not need to do everything. Eugene Peterson, whose work I love, describes the Christian life as so often a lazy life, because we fill it with activity rather than doing the one thing that is most difficult, and that is stopping and asking. What is it we're to do? Fill the jars with water. There's water nearby, there are jars nearby, and then what happens? Abundance. I'm always stunned by the abundance. There are 450 litres at least. What's that? Hold on. Take my notes here. 600 bottles. It's a big cellar, isn't it? It's a big calf with 600 bottles in it. abundance. 1 Corinthians 12 is a story of abundance. Perfect for the week of prayer for Christian unity. I hope you're all going to, if you're in the sand or around, be able to join us on Wednesday for the torchlit procession, where we all gather and we walk from St. Redemption, is that what we call it? St. Redemptor's across to here, then back down to St. Jean, carrying torches. And there'll be an abundance of torches, I'm sure of that. But this is a story of abundance, of many people and many gifts in Corinthians, of much wine being given. It's the paradox of the Christian faith. When we feel we have nothing, there is one who has everything right beside us. It's the paradox of living in an age of incredible material abundance, where more and more people feel like their wine has run out. And Jesus is right beside us, saying this is not about survival. This is about death and resurrection. When are we willing to ask the absurd question? When I was walking the Camino, 2 weeks later, I had a repeat experience. I came across a farmyard. Now, two things in life frightened me. Horses, very large Spanish sheepdogs. They're not sheepdogs like Scottish collie dogs, which are bad enough. These are sheepdogs that are there to protect the sheep. So you come across a farmyard, and there's one road through the farm, and I can look down the road and I can see it's about 2:30. I'm being British, I'm walking through the siesta, and I can see three dogs sleeping. There's an old dog, which is enormous. There's a young dog, which is even bigger. Then there's this other mangy looking thing, which is bigger than a wolf. And I got 3 steps towards the yard and I froze. I couldn't move. I had my walking pole. What do? But I've learned this time. You see, I remembered Marianne appearing on my shoulder. And I said, God, I'm going to wait here until you send some help. I had to wait 2 minutes. And then a 4'11", 68-year-old French lady appeared. And she was very frail-looking. And I explained to her in broken English, a bit of French, and a wee bit of German, and sign language, what was going on, and she burst out laughing. And she said to me, I have 2 walking poles, you have 1, there are 3 dogs, come on with me. And so with her. Gingerly we walked. And as we walked, me a little behind her, her laughing a bit, but being very encouraging, we got into the farmyard, and there just out of sight was the farmer, sound asleep, but he explained why his dogs were not tied up. They too are Spanish dogs, they're sound asleep. It's the siesta. I never knew. One of them opened an eye, but she stared them down. What would we ask? Sometimes the most unexpected. The disciples saw Jesus' glory and they believed in him. And the glory is of him being with them. And the glory is being with us now. He saves the best the last. Sometimes we need to be at the worst to be the best. This story is about being tired out, being at the wit's end, and encountering one who can help. This story is about resurrection.